Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today I'll be joined by best-selling author Peggy Rowe. She is the mother of TV host Mike Rowe, who you'll know from shows like Dirty Jobs and Returning the Favor. Peggy has written a funny and uplifting book about her relationship with her own mom, so we'll be talking about all kinds of family matters today. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is Peggy Rowe. Peggy, as some of you may know, is the mother of Mike Rowe, host of TV shows like Dirty Jobs and Returning the Favor. Over the last few years, Mike started featuring her texts and emails to him on his Facebook page, and his fans loved her warmth and wit, adopting her as America's grandmother. She wrote and self-published a book recently of essays about her own mom, Thelma. With encouragement from Mike and his fans, Peggy wrote a book of essays about her own mom, Thelma. It reached number one on Amazon for a while and knocked some heavyweight authors out of the top spot. Peggy's book is called About My Mother, True Stories of a Horse-Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball-Obsessed Mother. And joining me today to talk about the book, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Peggy Rowe. Mrs. Rowe, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Good morning, Tony. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, first, let me start by complimenting you on writing this warm, funny book. It's about a family loving each other, even though there are sometimes personality differences. But let me ask, how did your son, Mike, who everybody knows as the Dirty Jobs guy, Mike Rowe, and as you called him, his little Facebook friends, how did they help you decide to turn these memories into stories for a book?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's kind of a long story. As you know, Mike lives on the West Coast, mm-hmm. and I live in Maryland. So in order to keep in touch, we thank God for social media and for electronics, for cell phones.
Yes.
It's so much easier to keep in touch. So I write him letters and on Facebook, mm-hmm. and he reads them aloud.
Yes.
And I wrote him one about losing my blue purse in Walmart.
Okay.
So he read it on his Facebook page, and we were astounded. Over 100 million people read that or watched him reading that story.
Wow.
The comments were amazing. So a month or so later, in an effort to keep him apprised of his parents, what we're doing.
Yes.
I wrote him a text, mm-hmm. and it was a humorous text about his father going out walking when it was 93 degrees. And I tried to talk him out of it, but I couldn't. So I told him to be sure to take ID so that they could call me from the hospital when he's
yes.
lying on the sidewalk. So anyway, his fans just seemed to really enjoy the texts and the letters. So he got back to me the next day after the text, and he said, Mom, I think we're on to something. Why don't you write me the occasional letter and the occasional text? Mm-hmm. I'll share them. And if that book of yours is ever published, people will know who you are, and they'll know that they like your style of writing. So that's what we've been doing. And thanks to his social media following, they have embraced me. They've embraced my work, and I've learned a lot about what people are hungry for.
Oh, that's very interesting. I'm talking to Peggy Rowe about her book, About My Mother, True Stories of a Horse-Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball-Obsessed Mother. So, well, tell me about that. What have you found that people are hungry for? Because this is a very family-oriented book. It's warm. It's funny at times. What have you found that people want?
You know, in this atmosphere of divisiveness in our country, mm-hmm. people are sick. They are just sick and tired of constant battling back and forth and disagreeing and harsh comments. They want to feel good about something.
Yeah.
And my book is a feel-good book.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a family that really loves each other,
yeah.
despite severe differences in temperament and personality.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it's a positive story, and I've been writing for some years, but this is my first book. But when I've published stories in newspapers and magazines, I'm always very aware of the comments and the reaction. And the reaction to my stories has been very positive. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe I will compile these stories into a book. And the ones about my mother gained really the most interest and the most positive feedback.
Yeah.
And so I went with that.
No, that's perfect. And it's perfect for this show because everything we do revolves around this ideal that it's better to light a candle than curse the darkness. And that's what you're doing. You're lighting candles with these stories, trying to bring a little light into people's lives. So I think that's really wonderful what you're doing, sharing your stories about your mom. And well, let me start talking about your mom a little bit, because you write in the book that you were divergent personalities, and you even write that she was like two women who inhabited the same body. So tell us a little bit about your mom, Thelma Noble, and some of the qualities that made her stand out.
Well, my mother was from the South. She was refined. She was sophisticated. She liked the opera. She liked the ballet. She played contract bridge. She was a meticulous housekeeper and very conscious of her style when she dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And she had two daughters, and her goal in life was that her daughters would grow up to be refined young ladies.
Yes.
So know that that's happened, but she did her best to make sure that happened. Well, in 1954, the Baltimore Orioles came to town.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I talk about mother number one, the sophisticated, refined mother, and mother number two, the baseball fan who shouted obscenities at umpires and threw underwear at the television set. And it was just such a complete about face. It was hard to believe that that was my mother.
Did you ever get a, I mean, had she ever exhibited an interest in baseball? Did you ever get a sense of what converted her to this really Orioles loving fan?
Well, that, you know, that's the amazing conundrum of all of this. As far as I knew, her only interest in sports previous to the Orioles was when she was in high school and played basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next, you know, her next big foray into sports was the Baltimore Orioles. Now, my mother, and we haven't talked about this yet, but she was somebody who was always in charge.
Mm-hmm.
She ran our house. She ran our church.
Mm-hmm.
She ran the Lioness Club. She ran the bridge. She was always in charge.
Yeah.
And the surprise of it is that, you know, in baseball, you can't be in charge.
Yeah.
She was a bystander. She really had no effect, no real effect on how the Orioles played.
Mm-hmm.
So that was why I couldn't understand why she would be interested in something that she had, you know, no control over.
Sure. Well, it seems like she almost would have loved to have been offered a job as a coach or a manager.
And, you know, I think she would have done well.
I think so. I'm talking to Peggy Rowe about her book, About My Mother, True Stories of a Horse-Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball-Obsessed Mother. And, you know, one of the other things I get from this book is that it's also a love story, really, about your father and your mother, because your father seems to have such a deep respect and love for your mom. And, you know, he kind of goes along with her baseball obsession. Talk a little bit about their relationship.
I think I've never seen a love story quite like that of my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them grew up poor.
Yeah.
And married during the Depression. They had to elope to Elkton, which is a small town in Maryland,
mm-hmm.
famous for elopements.
Okay.
So they really didn't have anything. But my mother and my father was not extremely well educated. He went to the seventh grade, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother always, I mean, education was so important to my mother.
Yeah.
But she saw something in my father and encouraged him through the years to better himself. Well, he did. And she was always at his side. And anything she did was fine with my father. Right up until the time they passed away in 2005 and 2003. And her one wish in her senior years was that she would outlive my father. so that she could continue taking care of him.
Oh, that's sweet. And did she outlive him?
She outlived him by 2 years.
Okay.
He was an invalid for the last 11 years of his life.
Oh, wow.
He had glaucoma
mm-hmm.
and had lost his eyesight.
Oh, wow.
And he had had a stroke earlier on, which left him very weak on mm-hmm. one side.
Okay.
So she took care of him, and she said to me one day, "Peggy, if I die first, who will take care of your father?"
Mm.
And I said, "Well, Mom, I love Dad as much as you do." She said, "I know, but you wouldn't take care of him like I do."
Mm.
And that was probably true.
Yeah, yeah. No, that it's a beautiful love story between the two of them. It's just the respect they have for each other. It really comes through the pages. And so now we've talked about the baseball-obsessed mother. Let's talk about you, the horse-crazy daughter. From where did this love of horses stem from? What, was it watching Annie Oakley or Dale Evans on TV, or was it something inbred in you?
You know, we used to talk about that, and my mother came to the realization later on that I was born with this passion for
uh-huh.
horses. I galloped around the neighborhood as a young child as though I were a horse. I leapt over hedges and bird baths, and the neighbors, I think they felt sorry for me. They thought something was wrong with me. I just loved horses.
Yeah.
And it was kind of difficult for my parents. They couldn't afford a horse.
Mm-hmm.
So my first horse was the grapevines in the backyard. They were wrapped around a very sturdy pole. And my mother made me a saddle out of an old cushion and reins out of clothesline rope.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, she blessed me. She helped
wow.
me on my horse
yeah.
and told me to go ride the prairie. And that's what I did.
So eventually, she was resistant to the idea at first, but eventually she saw how much you loved it, and she supported you in that, huh?
She did. She eventually embraced my passion and even did what she could to make sure that I had access to a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And which, you know, led to having my own horse. She did embrace my passion, but she always had her own idea of how to do things. And I had a horse that was just a pleasure horse. We could never afford an expensive blooded horse,
yeah.
a thoroughbred or even a halfbred. And I just had a very mundane horse that was, if he were a dog, you would have called him a mutt.
Okay.
But I loved him.
Yeah, I was going to say, it comes across that. And was this Jet now?
It was.
Okay.
You did read my book.
I did read your book. No, and I encourage everybody to read it. I'm talking to Peggy Rowe. Her book is about my mother. And you mentioned earlier that your mom did a lot of work with the church. So I'm curious, what role did God and faith play in your house growing up?
Well, I joke that our church was like a sibling.
Uh-huh.
We lived just one block from the little gray shingled church. It was Presbyterian church, and my father was the Sunday school superintendent
mm-hmm.
as far back as I can remember. He was an elder. My mother was the president of the women of the church, and they were involved in every phase of the life and work of Kenwood Presbyterian Church.
Okay.
We were there multiple days a week.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a big part of my life. And believe it or not, I'm still a member of that church,
oh, wow.
as is my husband, and all three of our children came through this church.
Wow, that is wonderful. And now, do you also play piano for the church or organ?
You know, well, I'm sure you read the story about my piano lessons.
Yes.
It was another dream of my mother's that her daughters would be musicians,
mm-hmm.
as well as school teachers. That was her big dream. So she insisted on music lessons for us. And there are so many humorous stories about that. But I did take piano lessons for some years. I really did not have any innate talent. However, my mother would not let me stop. And so I did, you know, I did learn to play somewhat. I don't play in public, but I thoroughly enjoy it myself. I do play from time to time. In fact, my minister just called the other day and ask if I would accompany Christmas music during Advent season. Mm-hmm. I play well enough for that.
Okay. But, so that's what I read that got me thinking that you do play for the church.
Let's just say that nobody would pay to hear me play.
Okay, well, maybe you're selling yourself short. So, but it's still, it's wonderful that you do that and that you're still so connected to your church. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Peggy Rowe about her book About My Mother, True Stories of a Horse Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball Obsessed Mother. Now, I know that you write in the book that your mom loved proverbs like idle hands are the devil's workshop, and she always kept busy with chores. And since they say we often become like our parents when we get older, I'm curious if you wound up adopting any of your mother's ways when you became a mother yourself.
Do you know, there was one saying that I hated because she said it so many times, and I'm afraid I wasn't a very neat child. But she would constantly say, there's a place for everything and everything in its place, to get me to put things away. Mm-hmm. And when my children were growing up, I found myself saying that from time to time. I never really attained my mother's level of perfection, mm-hmm, as far as homemaking and being a housekeeper. However, I do like neatness. I'm not cluttered in any way.
Okay.
You know.
Sure.
So I have repeated that
That little proverb. Okay, so that goes good. And I'm curious, since you and your sons, they grew up next to their grandparents. Do you know how it affected them having, their grandparents so close? Because a lot of families are scattered, and I grew up close to my grandparents, like a few houses away. So, I consider it a very beneficial relationship. I'm curious how your sons, what they think of it. Do you know that?
I do. You might have heard that Mike and I did a book tour last week in, mm-hmm, New York City.
Sure.
So we did a lot of interviews, and I heard Mike talking about his relationship with his grandparents. And I know that his brothers feel the same because they have added family remembrances to the back of my book. Mm-hmm. All of our children considered it such a bonus to live so close to loving grandparents. My parents worked hard. My mother had a career in real estate after her children were raised. Mm-hmm. And my father continued working for Baltimore County as an inspector in the electrical field.
Okay.
So they had full lives. So they never, it wasn't as though they ran in and out of our house every day, mm-hmm, and controlled our lives. But they were there next door always when we needed them.
Yeah.
And we were there when they needed us, but the children just adored their grandparents, and it was mutual.
Yeah. No, I think so. I did hear Mike talk about his grandparents like that, and it is a wonderful thing. And I know there came a point in your relationship, and you kind of referred to it earlier with your mom when she was older, and the parent-child roles were somewhat reversed, like when you had to convince her to stop driving. How did the two of you handle that role reversal? I mean, did she stay feisty well into her old age?
She stayed feisty until the day she died.
Okay, good.
Getting her to stop driving was such a challenge for me. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking back to, she had put the car keys in my hand so many years ago. Mm-hmm. And here I had to take them from her. And her favorite saying was, I'll know when it's time to stop driving.
Yeah.
Well, she did fall and break her hip, and she decided it was time to stop driving then, and she was in her 90s.
Okay. And is this the time she fell and she watched the Orioles game while waiting for the ambulance?
This is. She was 90, and she was visiting my home, and she was walking across the floor, mm-hmm, and apparently her hip broke, and she fell to the floor, and she was in pain. However, she could hear the ball game, the Orioles game, in the other room. And she said, so of course I called 911 right away. Mm-hmm. And she said, I want to go in the other room and watch the ball game while I'm waiting for them to come. And I said, Mom, no way. You'll be in too much pain if we try to move you. She said, I don't care. I want to see that game. So I called the neighbors and
you moved
her to the sofa where she lay and watched the game until the ambulance arrived and took her to the hospital.
Wow, you just got to admire that kind of toughness. I mean, it's funny in the long run. I'm sure it wasn't at the time, but it's just wonderful how strong a woman she remained till the very end. I'm talking to Peggy Rowe about her book about my mother, True Stories of a Horse-Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball-Obsessed Mother. It's really a wonderful read, and we have a few minutes left, and I want to touch on the guy that you call Prince Charming on your Facebook page, your husband, John, who I believe you are now married to for 58 years. Is that correct?
As of yesterday.
As of yesterday. Well, happy anniversary to the two of you.
Thank you so much. Oh, listen, this was the best decision I made in my life. To marry John. He has been remarkable and there for me every step of the way. He was in New York with me, holding my hand the entire time, always there.
Yeah, and he's always taking pictures on his tablet, right? So he's pretty tech savvy.
I did my first library event on Sunday. And this is my first public presentation without having Mike at my side. So mm-hmm. I was just a little bit nervous.
Okay.
But, I mean, after 2 minutes, everything was fine and it went well. But the first thing I did after welcoming people was to introduce the man on the front row taking pictures of me with his tablet. And that was John. But a lot of the people there are Facebook fans. And so they read my blogs and they knew who he was.
Sure, sure. Well, you write a lot that he does a lot of volunteering, especially with Meals on Wheels. Has he always been that caring kind of person? And, I mean, how are you affected by the compassion he shows to others? How does it impress you?
You know, I am so impressed. And I think it's been good for me through the years to see his giving nature.
Mm-hmm.
In my house, if it's Tuesday, it's Meals on Wheels. He's there right now because we're recording this on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Wednesday, he's volunteering at the oncology unit at our local hospital every Wednesday. In fact, we were supposed to go away on Wednesday for Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
but we're not leaving until early Thursday morning so that he can go to the hospital and help. It's just such a priority. And people are so appreciative. No matter where we go, it seems, we run into somebody who knows him from either Meals on Wheels or the hospital.
Yeah, no, that is wonderful. And, I mean, you do write, it's funny in the book that initially John did not pass muster with your mom, but she did grow to love him over time, right?
Well, you know, I have said through the years that my husband is the best gift that I have given to my parents ever.
Wow.
He was the son my father never had,
mm-hmm.
you know. He was like a son to my mother, and he was there for them throughout their senior years especially. And he and my dad were pals.
Yeah.
Many, many the time they went into the woods together with the tractor and two dogs and sawed down trees and for the wood stove and the fireplace. When Dad could no longer drive because of glaucoma and John had retired, every morning John would take Dad back to McDonald's so that he could meet his retired friends. They just had a wonderful relationship.
Well, no, that is wonderful, and I'm talking to Peggy Rowe. And before we wrap, I just have two more quick questions. One, now that you've gotten a taste of being an author, do you have another book in the works?
Funny you should mention that, because I do. I've been writing for years and publishing in newspapers and magazines, but as I said, this was my first book. I have so many essays, humorous essays, stories about the family that I would love to share. And so I am about two-thirds finished my next book.
Wonderful.
But, you know, I think publishing a book, my goodness, it's difficult. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea it was involved. I thought, so I sit down and I write the book and I send it off and it comes out in the stores. How, you know, what a nice thing. It's very involved. But I have met some wonderful people.
Yeah, no, it sounds like, and it looked like the book tour last week was a lot of fun. And just in our final minute, what do you hope people who read About My Mother, what do you hope they take away from the story?
You know, I hope that they're able to laugh no matter what the circumstances in their lives may be. I hope that they're able to laugh. I hope that they can feel good about life in general, about our country, about family, about loved ones. I know this sounds syrupy sweet, but I just want people to feel good. And, you know, part of the reason I wrote about my mother was a comment I received some years ago. I had had a story about my mother in the Baltimore Sun, and they always include emails, so I got a lot of comments. And one woman said to me, "Peggy, I want you to know that I cut out your articles about your mother. I've put them into a notebook, and I call it my happy book. And whenever I'm feeling down about something, I take out this happy book and I read it." I hope people will look at my book like that.
Wow, that is a wonderful vote of confidence, and it's just got to fill you with you know, the confidence that you are doing what God meant for you to do with sharing these stories.
I hope so.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking to Peggy Rowe about her book, About My Mother, True Stories of a Horse-Crazy Daughter and Her Baseball-Obsessed Mother. She may be Mike Rowe's mom, but she's also a wonderful author in her own right. She shares these wonderful stories in the book that are full of love and family and community. And like she says, it's just what the world needs right now. So I encourage everybody to pick up About My Mother by Peggy Rowe. And Mrs. Rowe, it really was a pleasure talking to you today.
Oh, it was great talking with you, Tony.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
No matter how hard we try to maintain a positive perspective, there's no getting around negative people. They may be in the next cubicle at work, behind the fence in the backyard, or even at festive family gatherings. So how do we keep our positive outlook when confronted with people who travel with their own dark clouds? That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Staying Positive Around Negative People. It will help you change the way you respond to the naysayers in your life and enable you to share a more Christ-like, positive spirit with others. To request your free copy of Staying Positive Around Negative People, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.